Chapter 24. Chartered Schools, the Bleeding Edge of Change. Some local school boards are unwilling to relinquish power for school experiments out of their control. Star Tribune editorial. February to April, 1992. The controversy around chartering was starting to get ugly. After relatively smooth sailing for the first two chartered schools, the next seven charter applicants ran into opposition from local school boards for a wide variety of reasons. Perhaps some of the charter proposals needed more work. But local school board rejection of 7 out of 7? I'm afraid there is a trend developing here, observed Representative Becky Kelso in the Star Tribune on March 16, 1992. For the applicants, these school board rejections were nothing less than heartbreaking. I had the opportunity to work with Griff Wigley and other parents who brought a proposal for Cannon Valley Middle School, CVMS, before the Northfield School Board in the city where I attended college. In my view, this proposal was one of the purest to date because it created a new and innovative school. Both Kelso and I thought the proposal was exceptionally good. So did the Blandon Foundation, a philanthropic organization supporting rural Minnesota, which selected CVMS as one of 20 finalists for funding out of 84 applicants. The CVMS application proposed an ungraded program for 100 11 to 15-year-olds. It was centered on the idea that students can solve community problems while learning. The approach would develop the intellectual, emotional, physical, social, aesthetic, and spiritual capabilities of the whole person. Developed by a local group of teachers and parents, the group first presented the application to the Northfield School Board on November 25, 1991. The proposal was subsequently featured in numerous public forums and school board hearings. Both Kelso and I attended at least one of these gatherings to answer questions about the chartering law. In the end, our informational hearing was for naught. The Northfield School Board, on the recommendation of Superintendent Charles Kite, voted 5-2 on February 24, 1992, not to sponsor the school. Some of the parents involved in the CVMS proposal had started a private elementary school, Prairie Creek Community School in Northfield, 10 years before, after trying unsuccessfully to set up an alternative in-district program. According to Wigley, that perception of private school elitism was hard to shake, even though the CVMS proposal aimed at assuring equal access to all students. As Mary Jane Smetanka reported on March 16, 1992, in the Star Tribune, "We had all been involved in starting a school before, and they knew they weren't dealing with fly-by-night folks," said Griff Wigley, one of the parents who planned the charter. "But it brought up a lot of tension in the community. We were seen as a group of Prairie Creek people trying to start a private school with public money." As many as 175 people attended public hearings on the issue. Much of the discussion centered on money. Many people who remembered the decade-long budget crisis that ended just 3 years ago were frightened that the school district could lose up to $300,000 in state aid if 100 students switched to the new school. Superintendent Charles Kite, whom many credit with stabilizing the district's finances, opposed the charter. His main concerns were philosophical. "Taxpayers in public schools have a voice in school governance through school board members," he said. "But charter schools disenfranchise taxpayers because only teachers and parents are represented on school boards." Kite also said he was concerned that the charter school would create a separate public school experience that would become elitist, because only certain kinds of students would be interested in the school. Wigley said the charter group proposed that the regular and charter middle schools be equally promoted as choices. "The system we have now is elitist because only people who can afford to move, pay tuition, or transfer out have a choice," he said. Before the charter surfaced, the district and Wigley's group had discussed starting a similar program in the regular middle school. That failed charter has killed that plan, Kite said. The staff at the middle school was quite threatened by this. The implied message was that something was wrong with the middle school, he said. The bridges have been burned for the time being. It was hard to read this kind of comment. Chartering is about choices, not about making any school's approach right or wrong. And how can chartering disenfranchise taxpayers when the parents and teachers of the chartered school are taxpayers as well? Most importantly, in chartering, the money directly follows the child. Isn't that the greatest accountability of all? My heart went out to Griff and the other parents who had worked so hard to make this dream a reality for their children and the community. These were proven entrepreneurs who wanted to make a difference, and they were stopped in their tracks with no other option open for them. On April 16, 1992, Wigley wrote the following memo to chartering supporters. If misery loves company, I guess we're all feeling a bit better these days as we watch nearly all the charter proposals bite the dust. It's taken us a while to recover, not only from the disappointment of the 5-2 board no vote, but just from the grueling pace we'd all been keeping in the final weeks leading up to it. We met formally as a provisional board last week and have decided to disband for the time being. None of us had much inclination to shop around for a sponsorship outside of Northfield, as we felt that it would just create more divisiveness in the community. I did approach Superintendent Kite about whether he'd be open to our proposing a site-based managed alternative school within the district. As you may have seen in the Star Tribune article a few weeks ago, his answer was that we burned our bridges. One thing we did reach consensus on before we disbanded, however, we will work to help pass an amendment to the law to make it possible for another publicly accountable body to sponsor a charter school should a charter sponsorship be denied by a local board. On another positive note, a rescind charter schools amendment proposed recently at the DFL Rice County Convention was soundly defeated. I think we'll have more public support next time around, especially if we can muster the energy to keep the issue in the public eye. The difficult Northfield experience was becoming the norm for chartered school applicants. On February 21, 1992, I attended a St. Cloud community forum of parents and educators in which the participants discussed Joan Rydell's proposal for a chartered school. A 6-page article in Teacher Magazine, a national publication, had recently featured Rydell's innovative teaching methods. The article, entitled Daring to be Different, was a glowing account of Rydell's growth as an educator and of her Choices learning approach, which combined learning stations, hands-on problem-solving activities, and advanced technology. But then, on March 24th, the school board decided, without even taking a vote, to reject Rydell's proposal. On April 14th, Dana Schrader, editor of the Minnesota Journal, reported that according to St. Cloud Superintendent Ron Jandura, the board turned down the proposal because it is not convinced that the existing system stifles innovation and creativity. All I could think was, excuse me? In the same Minnesota Journal, Schrader reported about a chartered school proposal in Emily, Minnesota, that was also rejected. Schrader quoted Bruce Grossman, superintendent of the Crosby-Ironton School District, as saying, "If it didn't have a financial impact in Crosby-Ironton, we'd have nothing against it. We'd be skeptical of the quality of education, though. It's hard for me to grasp that what occurs up there could be better than the program offered in the elementary school in Crosby." Another heartbreaking rejection was dealt to the teachers who sought to turn their successful Area Learning Center, ALC, in the suburban Moundsview School District into a chartered school. ALC served some of the north suburbs' most challenging young people, ages 16 to 21, who had a variety of academic and social issues such as drug use, abuse, or pregnancy. Of these students, 80% were over 16, so they didn't even have to go to school. ALC staff wanted to do things differently in order to reach these students, many of whom had dropped out of traditional schools. They proposed a chartered school. Peggy Hunter of the Minnesota Department of Education called the proposal outstanding. According to local news stories, however, the district administration thought that accepting the ALC proposal would set a precedent we can't live with for the district as a whole. The superintendent recommended against the change to chartered school. In early April 1992, the Mounds View School Board defeated the proposal with a 4-3 vote. Ted Coldery couldn't help but point out the contradictions in the rejections. The Northfield School Board rejected the CVMS proposal because it was new and untried and risky, because it would take away kids from the existing school and create financial problems for the district. The Mounds View School Board rejected the ALC proposal for opposite reasons. It wasn't new or risky, and if anything, there would have been a positive financial impact. Some were students who would not otherwise be in school. It was as if the board felt ALC was doing a fine job in its current status and no changes were needed. Charter applicants couldn't win. To make matters even worse, one of the previously approved chartered schools was now under threat. The Winona Education Association, the local teacher union, was threatening to file a grievance if the Winona School District signed the contract with Bluffview Montessori Charter School. The union contended it was a subcontract to an outside group for educational services. The union's contract forbade such subcontracts. While this contention was eventually rejected in the legal process, it wasn't the only setback. In July 1992, the Winona School Board rejected the proposed charter contract. The contract had to be rewritten because two of the three teachers who sponsored it, Michael and Rose Dorer, were no longer with the school. The rejection delayed the opening of the school until fall 1993. Yes, the road to change is indeed a rocky one. As one charter applicant said, we are truly on the bleeding edge of change. Clearly, there was an inherent conflict in asking local school boards to authorize chartered schools when the board stood to lose from such proposals. As Hunter noted in the January 15, 1992 Education Week, that's sort of like putting the fox in charge of the chickens. An editorial in the Star Tribune on March 21, 1992 nailed the issue. Half measures abound in public school reform, and a half measure is what Minnesota got when the legislature enacted a charter school law last year. Now the predicted problems are materializing. Some local school boards are unwilling to relinquish power for school experiments out of their control. The legislature should amend the law to allow charters to be granted through the State Board of Education as well as the local district. One silver lining brightened the clouds of the rejections. In Forest Lake, just the prospect of a chartered school in a district brought about change. A group of families had been working for a Montessori alternative within their district for over 2 years. "Too much money for teachers, equipment, and transportation," the superintendent told them. Then the group presented a Montessori charter proposal on March 16, 1992, to the school board. It was enough to make the superintendent overcome his previous objections to a K-3 Montessori in-district alternative. The families got their school, it didn't matter what kind, but it wouldn't have happened without the pressure of a chartered school option. With only two of the first 9 charter proposals passing through their respective school board gatekeepers, it became clearer than ever that we needed to seek an amendment in 1993 for an alternative sponsor or an appeal to the Minnesota State Board of Education. But first, we needed to keep the chartering legislation alive in the 1992 session. On April 2nd, DFL Representative Bob McCarron offered an amendment to the 1992 Omnibus Education Funding Bill to repeal chartered schools. His amendment was defeated by a floor vote of 60-69 in the House. To me, McCarron's amendment was never a serious threat because the Senate would never have supported repeal. But the voting breakdown was a concern. The following table shows the vote in 1991 for the motion to send the funding bill with the chartering legislation back to conference committee, as it compares to the vote in 1992 for McCarron's amendment to repeal chartering. Of course, different factors affected each year's vote. The 1992 vote was a clean vote on chartering, whereas the 1991 vote on the Omnibus Education Funding Bill concerned multiple issues beyond chartering. More significantly, 1992 was an election year, and the teacher unions would be screening legislators for endorsement within a few months. In simple terms, for quick comparison, however, I have generalized the votes as either nay or yay to chartering. Nay to chartering. DFLers in 1991, 42. In 1992, 52. Republicans, 1991, 18. 1992, 8. Total, 60. 1991, 60. 1992. Yay to chartering. Democrats, 1991, 33. 1992, 24. Republicans, 1991, 31. 1992, 45. 64 yays in 1991, 69 in 1992. Not voting 6 in 91, 5 in 92. At first glance, chartering gained 5 more yays from 1991 to 1992. But upon a closer look, there was a significant shift with DFLers. Of the 15 members who went from yay in 1991 to nay in 1992, 13 of them were DFLers. Conversely, of the 17 members who changed their vote from nay in 1991 to yay in 1992, only 6 were DFLers. That is, 52 of the 60 total votes against chartering in 1992 were DFLers. More than 9 months had elapsed since chartering first passed the Minnesota legislature. Congress and several other states were now debating it. But on the home front, progress was painfully slow. Few local school boards were cooperating to make chartering a reality. While my Republican colleagues were coming on board, my DFL colleagues appeared to be moving away from chartering. We needed to build the will of the public. If chartering were to survive, we needed to spread and shape the word about chartering.